The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 17th chapter.
Glory to you, O Christ.
6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And Jesus was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with them. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While Peter was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up. And do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Well, some of you may know that Abby and I were on vacation this past week in San Francisco, and our 6 days in California were jam-packed with what seemed to be putting our time and family to the max. Long drives in the car, watching the clock to make sure we had enough time to get to the next family meeting, zeroing in on meaningful conversation with those who we were with. It was very restful. Maybe you can relate to this hustle and bustle with visiting your own family who live in other places. But even though our trip was jam-packed, it was incredibly worthwhile. And since I am one of the few, quote, believers in Abby's extended family, I get approached with a lot of very interesting and enjoyable questions from family members. And I get to have a lot of wonderful conversations. And one such conversation happened while we were in California with Joel. Joel is married to one of Abby's cousins. And I had over an hour discussion debate with Joel. Joel is a wonderful, soft-spoken, and patient person who, like many millennials, calls himself a secularist. And our discussion really highlighted, you know, the differences between somebody who might has a faith and somebody who proclaims secularism, and what are the commonalities and differences between these two things. And we found in this conversation that we had a lot in common, right? We, being a good person and treating others and the earth with respect, or sticking up for those who can't stick up for themselves. But one element that was very interesting to me, because we diverted in a lot of ways, and that was on the subject of mystery. Joel made it quite clear that it wasn't that he didn't accept the whole concept of mystery. As he said, you know, there are always things that are beyond our human comprehension and understanding. However, if I understood him correctly, and I did get his permission to use this example in my sermon this morning, mystery for Joel wasn't something that, in his words, really had much to do with living his life, really, in the full way possible. It was kind of just something that existed. And I really appreciated this discussion with Joel, because it made me think more deeply on the subject of mystery and the role that it plays in my own life. Enter the weird story of a rabbi going up a mountain with some fishermen, lighting up like a Christmas tree, talking with some dead prophets and then coming down the mountain telling these fishermen to tell no one of this experience. This story of the transfiguration, as the church historically calls it, has a lot of mystery to it. What does it all mean? Does it matter or does it not? What role then, I think, does mystery play maybe in our own lives today in relation to this story? Well, the word transfiguration in this text in the Greek is the word metamorphite. This, as you can probably guess, is where we get the word metamorphosis, in which the Webster Dictionary defines as a change of the form or nature of a thing or person into a completely different one by natural or supernatural means. And you know, whenever I read this word, I can't help but think, and this probably dates me a little bit, of the show Power Rangers, if any of you have seen it. And I just laugh a little bit to myself as, you know, thinking of Jesus as that Power Ranger kind of doing a little dance and metamorphosizing into some mid-90s Transformer toy. But in all seriousness, Jesus metamorphosizing or changing forms is something that is mysteriously foreign, that doesn't make sense on the surface. But, you know, what emotion does that instill in each and every one of us? I know for me, you know, the emotion of this story that I get is kind of a curiosity. I kind of feel like I'm on a precipice and kind of wanting to jump off a little bit to kind of see, you know, what is this all about? Kind of put some of the pieces together. And interestingly enough, the second definition that Webster Dictionary gives of metamorphosis says, quote, "The process of transformation from an immature form to a more mature form in two or more distinct stages." And so with this in mind, I think this is really interesting because I wonder, can the mystery of instilling curiosity be more about how the divine changes or more of how we change? When I was training in seminary and worked as a hospital chaplain, I had a little competition going on with some of the other hospital chaplains with how many patients we could go see and how many of those patients would get better after we saw them. And it sounds ridiculous as I talk about it, but the whole working theory was this thing that we kind of believed that in some weird way we were spreading this God's healing. You know, we were the ones who were teaching these patients about faith, about hope in times of crisis. Well, this little competition kind of went about halfway through the summer while I was at the hospital, until one of my chaplain colleagues had a sudden death on her floor. A 65-year-old woman was to be released the next day, actually, who had had a very, very successful heart transplant and was recovering nicely, and then the night before, she died of a stroke in her sleep. My colleague, as you can expect, was devastated by this, as she had counseled the patient and the family for quite a while. And in one of our group meetings of chaplains, she blurted out, you know, this woman and her family seem to do all the right things. And in my counseling, I felt like I kind of promised, you know, that healing was going to come. And now look at where they are. Well, there was a moment of silence after she blurted this out, and my supervisor calmly and assertively said, "Is that what you think your job is here? I'm sorry to disappoint you, but your job is not to teach the patients healing, but for the patients to teach you healing. It's not about what you bring to them and their families, but what they can bring to you. That's why you are here today." So suddenly, my world was turned upside down. I was the one who was being healed. I was the one who was being transformed. I was the one being curious and going deeper and being metamorphosized. Maybe this is what Transfiguration Sunday is supposed to be about. Being fueled by the mystery, not of Jesus and the details of Jesus transforming, but of our own transformation. How has the mystery of God transformed each and every one of us? Well, if you think about it, this Sunday is a bridge Sunday. We came through the birth of Jesus in Christmas, remember, way back in Christmas, the baptism of Christ, the Magi following the star to Bethlehem, the season of Epiphany, and now we are here. This Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, believe it or not. The start of the Lent season and the journey to Easter. It's a time for us to maybe take stock of the important question. How have you been transformed since Christmas? How have you matured? How have you gone a little bit deeper? What mystery maybe drives you into a deeper transformation that can keep you going into the Lent and Easter seasons? Now might be the time to start to think about these questions. Well, we know that one of the Old Testament stories this Transfiguration story plays off of is the Exodus story that we have today. The story of Moses going up Mount Sinai and writing down the Ten Commandments. Moses going up the mountain, and later in the story, we learn that he's glowing because of the presence of God. But one difference, I think, is very, very important between these two stories. And that is that Moses goes up the mountain himself. Jesus brings this ragtag group of disciples with him into God's presence. This group of disciples that just never seem to get it. Yet they are a part of the transfiguration anyways. Jesus was not alone in this mystery. We are not alone in this mystery. And that, to me, is very, very comforting, because I put myself in the disciples of not getting it quite a lot. So, in some contrast to my discussion with Joel and his take on mystery, and with all due respect, you know, I believe that mystery has a big part to play in our lives on earth, especially in our life of faith. Mystery has the capacity to transform us into deeper individuals and, yes, deeper communities by wrestling and walking together. Mystery can give us curiosity. And so may we together be driven from this story by the mystery, driven to go deeper, driven to wrestle with the things that we don't understand fully, driven to be metamorphosized into deeper children of God. Amen.